Hi, everybody, and welcome back to the Performance Path Podcast. I'm your host, Coach Porrick, and welcome to episode number 65. Folks, in today's episode, I got a chance to talk to the very excellent Claire Tracy. Claire is currently a strength and conditioning coach and technical demonstrator at the University of Gloucestershire. Claire is a fantastic level of experience and knowledge, and it was great to get a chance to talk to her today. Folks, I hope you enjoy the show, and I'll chat to you soon.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Performance Path Podcast. I'm your host, Coach Porrick. We are up on episode number 65, ladies and gents, and thanks for joining again on the show. Guys, today I have Claire Tracy with me. Claire, thanks for joining me.
Hi, thanks for having me.
No problem. Claire, could you give a little bit of nearly like a 60-second kind of a background? Because I always ask people, like, okay, can we just give a bit of a background? And the background is hard to do because I'm sure the same as myself and yourself, we have varied and interesting kind of histories in our careers and stuff like that. So
yeah.
Could you give a little bit of a brief background about how you got into coaching and kind of where you're at the moment?
Yeah. So I used to do loads of sport at school. That was, say, swimming, rowing, athletics, like martial arts, netball, basketball, just like literally anything. I just loved doing it. And then with that, my first kind of part-time jobs ended up being coaching based because I was involved in all of these teams. So I coached athletics from, say, like the age of 15. Trampolining came a little bit just behind that. And I ran some like summer kids camps and stuff too. So that's kind of when I actually first started coaching. So it's quite young. And I knew I loved it. I didn't think it was a career, but I just loved doing it.
How old were you when you started like those camps and stuff?
I think I started 15, 16 is I think when I actually...
myself.
Yeah. and it's because I was always at the gym doing all of these sports, and then they mentioned that they did this, they needed help, and I was like, oh, I'd love to help. And they were always amazing. I started there kind of coaching my sport. I actually went to art degree, to art school, which is really random, and then realized that I didn't want to do art. I still coached on the side. Like, I'd actually started rowing coaching, continued trampoline coaching. But then I went back to do my physiology. And before this, I'd done a rowing qualification, which led me to an S&C qualification, just like a little level two thing with First for Sport. But the guy who ran it was an S&C coach, and I'd never heard of what S&C was at this point. And he kind of just said, well, if you're going back into a physiology degree and it's your second degree, you should probably have an idea of what specifically, like where I want to go, what part of physiology, sports science. So he's like, come and try it. Obviously a great salesman as well. He got me onto another course. But I loved it. Like, it was only three weekends or something, like 6 days, but that's obviously not enough to be an S&C coach, but it gave me a taster and it gave me an idea of, okay, I need to get experience in this area. I need to follow that route. So that's where it kind of sparked. And from that, you know, I just coached as many teams as I could around it, like the rowers at the uni, a rugby team out with. Like, I remember emailing everybody in Glasgow to be like, can I help? And one rugby team got back. And I'm really grateful for that one rugby team because it started everything off. And from that, I went into like Hamilton Accies as an intern and Glasgow Warriors as an intern, the Scottish Institute as an intern. And when I graduated, that's when I went to my master's. I got a job with the Institute and I got accredited kind of all at the same time. So that was quite fast for me, I thought. It was just everything happened perfectly. And I was there for a couple of years, and that's when I then worked for Origin Fitness, the gym equipment company.
Yeah.
So I was their education coordinator. So kind of created and delivered education to kind of basically anyone who bought our equipment across the UK, which was an amazing experience for me. I met loads of people as well. And then a full-time job came up at St. Andrews, which is where I had like my first full-time S&C position. Like a lot of the stuff alongside Origin was all contracted based, like working with Sporting's Football. Gil Stevenson, have you heard of him? Do you know?
Yeah,
helped him a lot. He's been a big person in my development. And then 2 years at St. Andrews, and then it was amazing. I loved that job. And then I came down to UG, so University of Gloucestershire. So yeah, that's kind of been my journey. It's probably longer than 60 seconds. Sorry.
Well, no, but that's like, no, it's excellent. The so it's funny. The more people I talk to, the more I suppose we're all the same in that we have a few different kind of points on the roads that definitely have helped. And I think it's been either lovely, happy coincidence, be it by meeting certain people or by certain things kind of kicking in at right times and stuff like that.
Definitely.
And I think that's where we can all kind of attest to that. But you mentioned a couple of things. So are you pretty good at art?
I'm okay. Yeah, I did the whole 4 years. It's 4 years in Scotland as well, so it's not even three.
You finished that in the whole lot.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So how have you used that in S&C now? How have you used that?
I mean, I think it allows me to try and be creative. Like, I know there's a fine line in S&C about being creative. Do you know, you want to be thinking outside the box, but sometimes you can go that little bit too far. But I think it's probably allowed me to think a little differently about certain things. And I think like creativity may be behind like presentations and workshops and stuff and that kind of thing. It's not overly transferred. Doing it was textile design, like fashion based. But even in that, it's quite funny. Like, I knew I wanted to do sport, and my actual dissertation was looking at technological fabrics and the development of that, and looking at female fashion within the sporting industry. So,
interesting. No, so this I think is important, because there is like, that's a fantastic, I suppose, educational pathway to go in and experience to have. But I was only speaking to somebody else about this recently, like, it's the amount of alternate. So like, as coaches, we obviously get completely wound up in our own little world, and it's like, it's a complete bubble. Like, and we seem to think, I think, I don't know, maybe this is just me, but we seem to think we're the only ones who are thinking like this, you know? Yeah. You don't understand me, and kind of thing. But I think when you come from when you experience, especially, some very different environments like that. So, like, what kind of stuff were you doing alongside that kind of? So, like, we'd say in college you were doing that, but were you with the rowing most of the time that time, or what was the sports you were kind of dealing with? Was it actually the gymnastics and trampolining and stuff? Or
when I was at art school, I was still doing all of the sports under the sun. Like, eventually stayed with rowing, obviously you have to dedicate so much. But that's when I was coaching trampolining with like the students and the kids as well. And then I was their captain for a while as well, which involved trying to obviously coach and manage that team too. And then that's when I started to like coach rowing, but because I was rowing, I wasn't coaching as much, but I used to coach, like I did a little bit at Aberdeen Schools with that. So yeah, like even from the start, even with my art degree, I was still, my job was still coaching, like, which I find quite funny.
That's cool though. I suppose, and this is where we're going to kind of dig in. Well, there's a couple of ways you can kind of play this, but you mentioned about just the various internships that you've done. And like, they're fairly strong internships, to be fair. Like, they're with some serious outfits. And at the moment, what's your current kind of role or roles?
So yeah, my position at UOG is really varied, and I love that. When I first kind of applied for it, the description of what it was didn't really give it justice, and I knew I wanted to step up and to taste kind of academia to see if that's where I wanted to go. And this job is kind of perfect because it's almost given me that, but also allow me to still coach. So at UOG, my name is technical, my title is technical demonstrator in S&C. Okay. So with that, the main part of it is kind of like, I've taken a few lectures, that's not my main role, but I think I've maybe done like 12 hours or so in the last semester. So it's not as much as like what an actual lecturer will do, but I do that. And then the main part is I will assist my team with the practicals. I'll maybe take some of the practicals. And that's the bit I love, like teaching. It's amazing being in, you know, on the field or in the weight room with our students and teaching them everything. And I really enjoy that. And alongside that, I'm like kind of in charge of the kit. So if anybody needs anything like that, they come to me. I make sure it's there. I'll order it. You know, we were doing capital spends recently, and there was so much money. I was like, how am I involved in this? So that's a new thing that's new to me, which is good, is kind of looking at budgets and that kind of thing. And then the coaching side is amazing. I didn't think I'd have this much. So TAS, do you know what TAS is?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so Talented Athlete Scholarship Scheme, I think that's what it stands for. I'm involved with that through UOG. So you have like TAS sites, and we're one of them. And so I've got a GB judo athlete right now that I'm coaching, Chloe. That's really good. She's still involved with Bath, so I'm not designing her program. I'm just kind of taking her through some conditioning and in the strength room and stuff. So there's that. And then I also involved with Bristol City Women's Academy, which is really good. So the TAS has got a thing with the FA right now where they've got WSL academies have TAS coaches.
Nice.
So yeah, that's great. It's hard because I'm meant to be there an hour a week, but I'm basically running the whole program, which you can't do in an hour a week. So it's a lot more hours than what I'm meant to be doing, but it's something like, I love it. The girls are amazing. The coaches there, like in the academy, they're so good. Like I was a bit nervous going into football, and just like, I'd had some experiences before, and you know, my personal experiences have been great, like Dundee United and Hamilton Accies. Like the coaches I dealt with there were actually lovely. I had no bad experience, but I've just heard a lot of obviously negative experience, especially with the S&C. So the fact I was going in to kind of leave that, I was kind of a little bit nervous about how upfront the coach would be with how much he sees S&C as a benefit almost. But he is amazing. Like, we have loads of talks about everything to do with how I can help him, how he can help me, and how it all goes together. And his view on it is great. So yeah, I do that with the Academy girls. And we have a scholarship scheme as well at the uni, which is really great. It's not only for athletes, but it's for coaches, say like a rugby coach, netball coach, for referees, and it's for S&C coaches too. So I'm involved in the S&C part of that. So I mentor those coaches. They all coach our university teams, so kind of manage that area too, which it's great. It's a lot, but it's great. And it gives them a really, really good experience of putting what they're learning at uni into practice. And yeah, the last bit is I coach some of the scholars as well, the athletes too. So yeah, it's huge.
You sound busy.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love being busy. But I think one of the downsides is like, I sometimes feel like I'm not putting 100% into all of these areas, and that there's a lot, but I try.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And so there's a few pieces there. So the, let me see. So like you mentioned, the, so obviously you do a lot of mentoring, and there's kind of varying types, I suppose, or varying levels of mentoring required for different groups and stuff like that. And within the, I could see how, where it goes to within the academy situation, for example. So like you have a, obviously at the current situation, the current COVID situation, you have a limited amount of time with them, or you have limited access to them somewhat. You might have a little bit more in parts, but it would still be relatively limited compared to what you would have previously. And there's a need for, I suppose, a real efficiency and a conciseness of exactly what's appropriate right now. Has that bled into your conversations as a mentor with the other different types of coaches and stuff like that? Are you now a bit more, or I suppose we're all a little bit like this now, we're all a bit more efficient in our thought process of like, well, this is important, and like this, the stuff we did before in this was not really that important, so and now it doesn't take any big big jump.
Yeah.
What's your thoughts?
I think like I feel bad for our students right now, like
it's hard,
you know. Yeah, like it, and I feel like I'm a baddie as well, because I kind of slightly control the gym access for people too, and the equipment, and when I'm like no all the time, it's like a broken record. I feel like a bit of a tick, because I want them to be able to come in there, like their degree's practical, like they need to be practicing. That's one of the things you say to a coach, is practice like yourself, and they can't, and it's a shame. So I think like the experience they're getting, they're still getting something, they're still getting this online kind of aspect, which is better than nothing, and they still have relationships with their teams. But I think the main thing that I've kind of relayed across is like, you need to make sure you're giving them something that there's no barriers that they can create to not do it. So it needs to be simple. And in my head, I'm like, okay, I want to provide them with a full package of what they can do. If they don't do it, that's on their head. Do you know what I mean? Obviously, I'd love them to do it. So it's like, looking at different areas of the sport, obviously with the needs analysis, and what is a simple way to hit this? What's a simple way to hit that? And that's kind of the approach that we've gone with them. They're still doing online sessions, but it's also to keep their engagement, especially at student level, what can they do that's going to be exciting? Like what can be fun? Mm-hmm. So I don't know if this is answering your question.
No, that's actually exactly what I was going to go to next. So the, obviously this is one of the bigger challenges, and we've all had when it comes towards, and you guys have obviously, I suppose in Ireland, we've had a number of different lockdowns, and you guys have had a couple of different lockdowns as well, and kind of varying degrees, and I suppose, and even at the moment, varying types of feeling about it, like in varying approaches. So like we had, would say, a lot of the obviously professional sports and teams have been continuing pretty much a good amount over the last maybe year and a bit. But a lot of the amateur stuff, like the GEA and things like that, would have had to break down, had to switch off and then cram the season into quite a shorter period of time. So there would have been a lot of issues going on there. But and then a lot of ancillary bits and pieces like basketball and stuff like that would not have been at least say this would have just been like, no. So that's been all kind of pushed off to the side. The challenge there, I suppose, is, and like you mentioned, it's important about how you navigate that specifically for each individual team. So we'd say if it's a younger team, then they need certain requirements. So they might need, okay, like you're doing some endurance running with, we'd say, the academy stuff at the moment and the academy ladies.
Yeah.
And some of the other mentors are going to need a little bit more power work, but then it's a case of like, there's a lot of Zoom calls going on. So we're having to play with that a bit, and we're having to be obviously very creative, but I think there's an acceptance all over that there's a bit of delicacy about it, because we're all going through a bit of a traumatic experience,
yeah,
to be honest. And we're all trying to figure out, okay, when are we getting back? When is everything getting back to normal? And I think it's like, it's not going to happen in the very, very near future, like in the next month or two. So having to, it's actually funny nearly for us as coaches to look to near, like we obviously plan macro, micro, fucking meso cycles and the whole lot. And we can plan, like get our 4-year plan out in the whole lot of our mentality. But it's actually funny. I think a lot of us are nearly, we're like premiership managers at the moment. We're always under a bit of threat of like what's going on, you know, and it's not a case of like where we're not going to lose our jobs necessarily in coaching sense, but we could easily lose the dressing room if we don't give them the simplistic stuff and really approach it in a very basic way that they need, that they can actually take home and they can do it on a regular basis. Like, has there any particular things? So like I've heard lots of different, I suppose, curious and interesting kind of ways of engaging different teams and athletes and stuff like that. Have you come up with any particular mad quizzes or anything like that, or any kind of any funky challenges that, that have helped?
I don't think I've come up with anything crazy. I think the first lockdown, their program that I'd sent out to them was really quite simple, but we only thought it was going to be a short period. Like, especially like the bit, there was a bit just before Christmas and then Christmas. So I was like, okay, just keep it simple, send it out. It's a short period. They should they should be engaged. And we had our WhatsApp so they could send in their pictures, like, and you'd get random pictures of muddy feet and like random fields and stuff. But it was just them sure, like, you know, a bit of accountability. But then when lockdown continued after Christmas, that's when we started to add in like a little bit more like fun, so it's like more challenges, but I don't think any of them were crazy. Like, some of them were gym based, some of them were football based, but it just got them a little bit more excited and competitive about things and kind of kept their attention for, again, maybe like a couple of weeks, and then that started to die off.
Have you heard of any of your colleagues or anything like that coming up with any kind of really interesting ways of keeping that engagement? I've heard a couple of different things of it's more just, it becomes a, and this I had a small little conversation with somebody about this recently. It's, I think the emphasis with a lot more, I think with when sports and S&T kind of to an extent, or at least the emphasis on it kind of drops off, obviously with numerous lockdowns, there's obviously a gap in our lives. So we kind of go, oh, and especially if we're sports people, and there's like, be it from 13 or 14 or in the academy or whatever it is, or they're like you said, with some of your GB athletes or whatever it is. So it's always funny. They're obviously athletes and they love the sport, but an awful lot of it, some of the time, they may not overanalyze the sport. They might be just like, well, I just do the sport. I don't know how I'm this good. I just am. Or else I just work really, really hard and I'm just consistent at it. So, I think that's lessening a little bit now. I think to become a really, really good athlete, regardless, you have to be a little bit of a student, more and more of a student of the game, whatever it is, be it sprinting, be it judo, be it soccer. But my point on that is that I think there's been a bit more of an uptick in, whenever there has been games, there's been a bit more emphasis towards analysis of it, or at least understanding of, be it patterns of play or the types, like, and even especially if athletes are not that interested in S&C, now that's one of the only things they can really access. They can't go on the pitches. They can't be doing all of these different tactical kind of plays and stuff like that. So they have no choice but to go, okay, well, right, well, this goes bring completely back to brass tacks of like, okay, well, I need to do split squats. Okay, well, I have a kitchen. Right. So, you know what I mean? They have to actually take a fairly straightforward look at what's important, what's the very, very important building blocks for their actual athleticism. It's even something simple like the running mechanics. Like, there's been such a huge emphasis towards running mechanics over the last couple of years, and it's only growing and growing and growing. Mm-hmm. And I think we have more and more, I hope we have more and more interested and educated athletes now, because when sport does come back, they're going to start looking at it an awful lot more. Once it'll be like this flood of emotion, probably back. I think that's one of the big things is there's lots of ways of doing it, but I think probably the most important one I've seen has been the engagement of it, but also like allowing a little bit of space and time. Like there's a team that I work with, and I only work with them kind of briefly at the moment, but I was working with them last year, and they're a ladies team, but they have, and they've lots of different stuff going on. They've quite a mix of young and old, like, I suppose youth and senior players. And there's still an awful lot of like improving to do on it, I think, but, and there's a huge amount of scope for S&C and a huge amount of scope for quality practice and tactical awareness and stuff like that. But I think it's just a breakup in the season and the year that doesn't allow that consistency. Like you'd need a couple of good years to really build it. Cause I think they had really good success at underage, but then that transitioning into that senior stuff with all of life's issues is no joke.
Yeah.
So you do have, I suppose, a preferred style of coaching. So what that means is, do you bring art into the conversation much? Like obviously you're the kit person. So do you get to decide on certain styles and things like that?
Yeah. This is the fashion for today. I think in terms of my coaching style, it really does change. Like I'll adapt to the people in the room depending on like the teams. I think I've noticed this a lot, especially when I was at St. Andrews, when there was different sports and the sports that I worked with were very different. Like, do you know, going from rugby to rowing to golf, like they're all very different, and the atmospheres were. And I definitely would change in that. I think when I first come into a room, I'm a little bit, I feel like I've got to be a bit louder and to take control, to set that presence. I don't know if that's me thinking, you know, like, oh, I'm a female, I need to be a little bit more than, you know, like a male walking in where their presence is a little bit more controlling almost from the start, if that makes sense. So I think when I first go in, I do try to be a little bit more strict, a little bit more like, this is what happens. But as I get to know the teams, that's when I relax and I'll kind of adapt how I am session by session with the individuals as well as the time goes by. So like, for example, with like the rowers and the golfers, I was definitely more calm and collected. Like the sport that they are, they like just, you know, I could tell them to do, especially the rowers, I would tell them to do something and they would do it. There wasn't like, they would talk within the group, but it wasn't like boisterous. It was like they would talk in between sets and then they would get back to it and they'd be working hard. Mm-hmm. And I didn't need to encourage them a lot. Obviously, like with testing or something, I would be a little bit more enthusiastic. But in general, the atmospheres were a lot more calming and they just get the work done because they're used to being in their own heads. So I think it was still a bit different. Mm-hmm. For example, with like the rugby guys or like the volleyball team, especially the volleyball team, they're majority American. So the atmosphere in that room was really, really high. Yeah. Like it was very enthusiastic. It was always like every rep they were cheering each other on and stuff, and that was I loved that. Like the, especially like the volleyball team was one of my favorites at St. Andrews because they were just so encouraging of each other and so supportive. So with that, I definitely was more like that. Like they needed that kind of cheering on and like consistent support, and I did that. So yeah, I think with that, I was a lot more vocal. I think in general, like the main things that from all of them is I try to be as relatable to them as all as possible. Like I really believe in like really getting to know them and allowing them to trust me. So it got to the point where, you know, like with the rowers, I felt like their mom at the end. Like they would come to me with like every little issue that they had, like whether that was with school or with like an injury or illness, like, and yeah, that's a lot because, you know, at St. Andrews there's what, 300 athletes. But I like creating that. I like that they feel secure to talk to me, and I feel safe then that if they're coming in not feeling so great, they're not going to try and like lift this number that I've maybe prescribed that might injure them or something. So I think that for me is huge, is building that relationship, being empathetic with their situations, like stresses of like whatever it is, whether it was studies or home life or something.
That's important, because like when you're dealing with so many different types of athletes, and like especially like you mentioned the rowers there, like I know some rowers as well, and they're very much like they're singular interesting athletes, because like they're just so used to training crazy hours and crazy volume and crazy intensity, like, and they, because it's, I suppose, so having this is where I nerd out about this kind of stuff probably in my own head way too much, but I like looking at individual sports and whatever their needs are, obviously. And if it's something like soccer compared to rowing, like rowing is still a 6-7 minute kind of a job, but it's like you're looking backwards all the time at the start line, so you have to have this weird mentality about, okay, what am I doing? Like, whereas within something like soccer, it depends if you're a forward, like all you're doing, you are still looking back an awful lot. So like, this is just me kind of going off on one, but having that kind of stuff is a bit odd, because you would have a sprinter then who is literally only focused on down, up, down, up. And it's just mad, because when we break the sports down to such simplistic actual movement patterns, it becomes much more, the most important stuff is what's in their head and what they're actually formulating and thinking about, and how they're able to improve on that. And an awful lot of the time it comes from outside validation, or at least external validation. And that's where, if you leave, like the rowers, you left them to kind of do a bit and let them naturally come to you. Whereas, I think it's interesting. So I'm about 6'1", and I'm probably like maybe 15, 16 stone at the moment. So I'm a relatively large person. I think I've a relatively deep voice as well. Like, I obviously, when you hear your own voice, you're like, what the hell is this?
Yeah, I think I sound like Minnie Mouse. So
but having that level of presence is very interesting, because I think when I suppose, and that's one thing I'm curious is, have you found, like you said, you had very positive experiences as a female in the S&C world, and is that just because of, so I was actually going to say, so when you meet somebody new and you got like kind of like hang out with a new team or something like that, what do you like? So you have had a huge amount of varied experiences there. Which one do you go to first as your kind of reference point? Do you kind of go with it like, look, I worked with 300 athletes at St. Andrews and they were all hugely variable. So immediately something like that would go, geez, okay, she knows, kind of knows what she's at here. She's had huge experience in that. Or do you kind of go, no, I'm actually just a technical demonstrator. Da, 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 kind of thing, you know what I mean?
No. Like when I meet a new person?
So what I mean is that if you were to, like, you obviously don't go into your entire background and all of this kind of stuff. But if you had a go-to kind of a point where, like, you would reference as that as one of the more important experiences for a particular particular team. So we'd say with the Bristol?
Yeah, Bristol City.
And so what would I'm curious, what would their coach kind of really assimilate you with, like, what would he think that you actually really focus on and specialize in, so to speak?
Do you know, when I've came in, I don't know, when I've, like, so when I went into Bristol City, like, I don't really think I've said to them, I've done this and this. Like,
it's just your vibe.
Yeah, I think, like, I might have done this sometimes, like, but I don't think I go into new groups and really talk about that. Like, I think unless, like, there's an intro, a specific intro, like, this is Claire. And then if I stand up there, I might be like, yeah, I've, you know, I probably highlight the different teams that I worked with at St. Andrews, that would probably be quite important. But I think I'd definitely talk about my time at the Institute and the GB fencers that I work with. And I think there's a lot. Be the biggest things, because I think the different levels that I've worked with have really impacted how I coach, but also the numbers have as well. Like, I've been in so many situations where it's a specific one person, so I can dedicate a lot of time to that, or it's like 300. Yeah. So,
but I think that's what that comes across. That's what I meant was not exactly like, okay, I do this, and you kind of go da da da. I do this, this, and this. Yeah. It's more your attitude. Like, you have, like, you're quite easy to talk to and quite calming when you're talking to, like, even talking to you now. Yeah. So I've no doubt that when you come into but I've no doubt that when you come into a room or you come into a coaching situation, that it's very easy to adapt to that, purely because you have such confidence, or at least you have, like, obviously confidence, but you also have a huge amount of awareness of exactly what might be appropriate for that specific situation. I think where an awful lot of people have, and like you mentioned, it's, you might think that sometimes you're quite boisterous when you come in, or you're very calm when you come in, but most of the time you're very adaptable for that kind of stuff. And that only comes purely from experience and having such an awareness of exactly what has worked and what has not worked. I think that's one of the big ones. And that's where I think it's just obviously the whole mentality of being a generalist, and not like specificity obviously is vitally important, but I think as coaches, I think it's only getting more and more interest oriented towards or focused towards a significant amount of us, or amount at least of our personality being a generalist.
Yeah.
Because at such younger ages and stuff like this, that we're trying to obviously emphasize much more multi-sport activity, or much more multi-activity type of, I suppose, general physical activity. So we have no choice but we can't be sports biased as much anymore, because we're not going to get away with it. And then it's only going to pigeonhole us for much later in our careers.
Definitely. I kind of see like developing yourself as a coach a similar way to developing yourself as an athlete. Like, you've got to get that base of play, and you've got to experience so many different things, and that molds you. It gives you the foundation. And then after that, it's like, okay, if you've spent years in the trenches, if you've got all of this experience in different sports, different ages, like, then maybe you can start to pinpoint exactly where you're going to go. But I don't think you can be very good in one area if you've not experienced others.
Because exactly like I said about certain sports, like, you, if you're dealing with rowers compared to soccer players, like, there's quite a different mentality to that just in general, because one is obviously a team sport and one is, well, potentially an individualized sport. And that especially with like something like fencers, like you talked about, like, that's such a different type of a sport, and very, I suppose, quite a controlled sport. So you have a small piece of laneway that you use, like, you don't have to move laterally or anything like that necessarily, you know what I mean? It's interesting things like that there's a huge amount of the considerations for S&C and for actual coaching are huge around that. So the actual environment around it to specifically work on certain areas without detracting from the actual athleticism in general of the athlete is quite challenging, and it's really interesting. So you do some lecturing a little bit at the moment, or you kind of do, obviously with the situation. Have you any particular, recommendations for, and things that you found have really helped to fellow tutors, even in your situation with as a technical demonstrator and with Taz? Is there any particular things in particular that you have, especially over the last year or so, noticed that will help and all have really resonated with some of the students that you're working with? Is it just the empathy with the situation at the moment, or what's your kind of thoughts there?
It's kind of like lessons. I think I think one is one of the main things like I think about is understanding, you know, the limitations and the controllables. Because right now it's an awful situation, but if you stress about the things you can't change or control, then, you know, you're wasting your time, really. It's just causing you unwanted stress. So I think the main things right now that I speaking to any of the coaches or students is like just try and control what you can control, and that's when they're coaching as well as like say like their studies or anything like that. And also like the main thing, I think I did a little post about this the other day, is no, like the more I feel it, it's like the whole Dunning-Kruger, you know, that chart of and I know I've been up and down it, like I've not been up here yet, I wish I was up here from down in like the pit of despair, or whatever it's called most of the time. But I think it's understanding that there's so much information out there. You know, you can Google anything and get an answer, and then it sends you into a spiral of finding more and more and more and going deeper into something. I think it's understanding that you don't have to know everything, and you won't, but being okay with that, and understanding that if you're willing to keep pushing, especially in this situation right now, like just keep going forward. And I think with that, it calms you as well. So not only controlling what you can control, but understanding that your situation and where you are, I think that's they're both pretty important. I think in a normal life, I would probably say things like, you know, get out there and do everything that you can, but we can't. But yeah, I think when we get back to normal, like I'm very much one of those people that is like, get your face out there, meet people, like go to networking events for, you know, go to CPD stuff, do as much as you can, because like, you never know who you'll meet and you never know what you'll learn. And you can always learn from someone as well. Like, I feel like anyone in the room, you can probably learn something from just based on experiences. Yeah, I think that's probably, there's loads of things I could probably go into, but I think I like them.
No, I think you're absolutely right. I think it will be interesting when things kind of relax a bit. I think it's almost funny. We have like, obviously the situation is very, very challenging and very rough and quite a sad situation for a huge amount of people. But an awful lot of us, it's given us a huge amount of time to think and to actually slow down a little bit and give us a bit of space to go, okay, well, I do need to prioritize things, but I didn't have any time to prioritize that stuff at that point, because I was just in the middle of flipping loads of things. Whereas when I think that's one thing that like exactly is appropriate. I'm not convinced that when it all relaxes or something like that, that we'll all be out talking about S&C. We'll be talking about anything and everything. We'll be actually talking to people about what happened. What's your situation like, you know, what actually like, so I'm, like you said, there's nothing new under the sun when it comes to S&T. Obviously, there's research papers and things like this. There's obviously interesting micro steps being made forward all the time via huge amounts of great research. But for the most part, like getting aerobically fit is not that complicated. There's lots of ways of doing it, but like it's just how it is. You know?
It is strength. Like get the basics right first. Like most athletes I've worked with need to work on the basics, no matter what that is. Like right now, the like aerobic based stuff I'm doing with the footballers, like they came back, obviously COVID has affected it. I want to just get that, because that's going to impact their game primarily. Do you know, we're working on other things, but if their mass is like ridiculous, like if they can't run the end of the pitch without puffing out, how are they going to play a decent game of football?
Well, they're screwed, like,
so it's like, you know, hit the basics, get the biggest bang for your buck. What is that? Understanding it.
I think you're right. And that's So this is where we'll kind of, you mentioned earlier on a couple of characters, and you mentioned Gil Stevenson and a few different heads. He obviously one of the big mentors. Is there any one or two other mentors that you would have had a huge impact on you in the past? And also, who's a really interesting coach at the moment? Who's one kind of flying under the radar that we should have a look at?
I think first, like, I just, like, Gil, I always like talking about him because he basically kept me in S&C. S&C it's quite intimidating when you first come into it, especially in some situations. And obviously I was being in, like, Glasgow Warriors in the Institute, they're quite intimidating because they're good coaches, like, and filled with good athletes who have confidence. Everybody's got so much confidence that it's scary, especially when you're coming in like this little noob that's like, oh, like, I don't know anything. So I think it's really scary. And I think I had an experience, there's a couple of experiences I had early on that made me question if I wanted to be an S&C coach. I remember, like, I cried. Like, I'm not going to go into details of it, but I cried. And then I met Gil, and he came in to do some workshops on my master's course. And automatically, like, I was like, he's cool. And he was so good at teaching, but he has this way about him that he's not, like, okay, he's very stubborn and in his, he's got his ways, and but he's been coaching for 40 years. He's one of those people that you're like, you can do that, you deserve that. But he's one of the most approachable and, like, lovely people. He's amazing. And when I'd met him for the masters and that, like, I kept in touch with him because I was going to do my accreditation, and then I started working for the Institute, and I ended up working in the same area as him. So we had our bi-monthly meetings and he was there. So obviously built up more of a relationship. And then he mentored me through my accreditation. And, you know, I would have left if I hadn't have met him. Like, he was so encouraging. He was so, like, the way he talked to you, even though he's got 40 years of experience, like, that's not what came through. Like, obviously, I mean, you knew that and he was very good, but he talked to you on the same level. He didn't talk down to you. He felt like, I feel like a coach when I'm with him. Like, so he definitely kept me in S&C. Like, he was incredible. And even now, like, when I left St. Andrews, before that, I was still coaching with him to get experience from him. But since that, right now, I'm doing the Speedworks virtual internship thing. And that's great. Like, it's actually so good. And so Jonas Doji. I think he's ace, and he's really supportive as well. I've had a few conversations with him this week about what I can do at Bristol City and developing myself as a coach, like, in that area. And he's great. What he's put together is amazing, and the little community created, like, through that internship, and how excited he is about what he does, it shines through. So yeah, I think he's great. And another person right now that I really am learning stuff from, not like as in depth as the previous two, but I'd like to change that, is Angie Sorensen. I don't know if you've heard. She's from America. She's over with Middlesex right now doing a PhD. But she's worked with, like, Alico, with, like, weightlifting, like, running workshops. And I can't give her whole history, but she's basically a really, really good weightlifting coach. But she's also one of these people that I feel like I can just ask silly questions. Mm-hmm. So weightlifting, I felt like, was kind of one of my strengths. Mm-hmm. As an S&C coach, obviously, you've got to do so many different areas. Like, I felt like weightlifting was one of the better areas for me. But talking to her, I'm like, oh God, she's unraveled a whole load of other things that I'm like, I need to go deeper.
Is that regarding weightlifting that she would have unraveled, or its relationship to S&C, I suppose, its place within it?
I've started to, like, I've coached a few weightlifters and powerlifters and stuff like that before, but I've never actually, say, taken a weightlifter to competition.
Okay.
And I've got a student right now that's asked me to do that. Cool. So I've basically speaking to Angie to kind of like guide me through this process. Mm-hmm. So basically what happened is the first time I programmed him his first block, I sent that off to Angie to be like, okay, criticize it. Mm-hmm. and that was ace. Like, the feedback I got and stuff, like, it was positive, which I expected more negative. The first thing she said was like, okay, first of all, your program's pretty. I was like, oh, thanks, but what the hell are you gonna say now? but no, like, apparently it was a good program, and then she's giving me advice on like kind of the feedback that I give him and then progress into the next block. And so it's specifically for weightlifting, but obviously that's going to help me in general for my S&C as well. I think she's cool.
Excellent.
Yeah.
She's one to look at. So no, like, it's brilliant. So I suppose, and I'll kind of give it the whole CrossFit kind of a spiel. Like, we talked a little bit about offline, and don't get me wrong, I have huge respect and awareness that CrossFit and weightlifting are get sometimes a significant, either one has given the other a bad rap. Either I'm not sure whether specifically Olympic weightlifting has given CrossFit a bad rap, but CrossFit has definitely given Olympic weightlifting a bit of a bad rap.
I feel like they all hate each other.
Like, yeah, we have for years. SC always hates CrossFit. But I think it's because we don't understand each other.
And CrossFit.
It's funny. It's like, it's not that we don't want to understand it. It just doesn't seem to, it doesn't seem to fit. It's like, it's just a bad outfit. It's like, oh, well, this top doesn't go with the bottom. What's going on there? I think though, a lot of it comes back to, I think the most important thing is that there's obviously a how will I say it? I think there needs to be a huge amount of respect for weightlifting as an individual sport, or as an actual very important sport, like a very difficult, important sport, because it is a very base expression of power and explosiveness. And the same as sprinting, like, it's still a very, very important part of a lot of different movement patterns for sport, regardless of what it is. So if you're jumping for a header in soccer and you land in a bit of a quarter squat, like, you've landed in a power clean catch position or something like that. Like, so there's loads of ways you can go into kind of mad detail on that. But I think more so it's just the actual attitude towards it. Like you mentioned there, probably the most important step you've taken is actually keeping expanding your knowledge base and awareness base by challenging yourself. Even at this point, like, you've done a huge amount of excellent things, and now you're still going, okay, well, I have to go back into the fire for another ass kicking. I'm like, oh, I might not be very good at this, but I'll give it a chance. And I think an awful lot of coaches don't do enough of that. Like, don't pick up kind of new different sports and kind of go, okay, let's see what the crack is, you know, what might happen here. And also, they might do that, but they might try something new, but they also, the collaboration with another expert is vitally important to get that bit of feedback. I think if anything, the whole COVID situation has shown us more and more that the need for appropriate mentorship for us as coaches is vital.
Huge.
Because we get an awful lot of good context for, and a huge amount of confidence from it. It's like, there's nothing better than somebody buoying you up, especially a really good experienced coach going, oh, okay, I can actually handle this. Okay, this is great. So straight away, you're flying, you know?
I think I've definitely gone in and out of having a person like that. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't, so coming into UOG, I think I was nervous to teach. Even though I'd been teaching at Origin, I was designing the courses and it wasn't like to a curriculum and it's just different. And the level was different. We're now like, it's, I don't know, I came in and it highlighted what I needed to revisit and also what I needed to develop. And that's why I think it's pushed me right now to link to almost experts in those areas rather than just very good S&C coaches like what I've done previously. I wanted to speak to people specifically in those areas. And when then this internship came up, like I'd heard Jonas speak before and I thought it was ace, and my notebook, we went on fire with how much I was writing. And I saw that, I was like, that's ace. So I did it and I'm so glad I did. It's just opened up like things that I'm like, wow, didn't even know like you would look at that, or like it's ace. And it's the same with Angie. Like, she's not officially like mentoring me or anything, but I ask her lots and she's really excited to help me. So I guess it.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I think there's more unofficial mentors than actual official mentors these days.
So I think it just really highlighted to me with that Speedworks thing. When I started programming for Harry, I was like, do you know, you're confident doing this, but you could be better. And there's people that are better than you. So reach out. So I did, and yeah, she's ace. So nice. This is important.
Good stuff. So I won't keep you much longer. Claire, you've been excellent.
No worries.
Is there a particular, I suppose, either a book or a podcast or a research paper or anything like that that has caught your mind? Obviously, Speedworks and Angie and stuff like that and Gil, it's some really excellent stuff going on. And we have webinars coming out our ears at this kind of point.
Yeah.
We have more volume of, and we're adding to it obviously here, and we try and add as much value as we can. But is there anything in particular that you've really enjoyed recently, be it audiobook wise or where is,
what's, I've got what's a few listed. Kicked?
Yeah,
go I won't go it. Through all of them.
No, but that's okay.
Apart from this podcast,
appreciate
there's another couple that I really listen to quite a lot. One of them is the Tim Ferriss Show, and probably really popular with most people. But I just really enjoy interviews. Obviously, he interviews experts in a range of areas, and I just feel that we can develop ourselves with that a lot more than we think. So I find him very interesting. And like a few, like I really right now quite like just the NSCA and the ASCA podcasts. Obviously a little bit more S&C specific. Book wise, there's a two that I read over the first lockdown. Obviously I was furloughed, so I had a lot of time. And one of them is The Achievement Habit by Bernard Roth. I'll admit like parts of it I kind of skimmed over, but there's good stuff in there. And one of them, it made me really think about when I present an excuse for not doing something. And his phrase is, it's a good excuse. it actually goes into detail as like, it could actually be a very good excuse, but there's always a way around these excuses if you really want to do it. Like his example was like him and his wife were going to the cinema. She didn't really want to go, but he did. And when they got there, there was no tickets. So that's a good excuse not to go. But then he really wanted to go, so he made it work. So he went into the queue, spoke to people, tried to get tickets, tried to buy tickets, eventually got two tickets. So it kind of like, for me, it made me think about everything that I wanted to do and I didn't do, and the excuses that I came up with for. And I was like, you know, if I really wanted that, I would have done it. So I liked that. And that was just one thing I took from it. And then the other one is Just Chasing Excellence by Ben
Bergeron.
Bergeron,
yeah.
Yeah. And that's where I got the whole thing of like control the things that you can control and ignore everything else. I just think that's really important. And then a research paper, which is going to be released, which I think is going, I think it's going to be great. There's a, I posted a infographic the day of it.
I think, So it's
optimal training sequences to develop lower body force, velocity, power, and jump height, a systematic review with meta-analysis. And that's, so it's actually, it's my boyfriend's.
Nice.
But it, he's done it with like Chris Bishop, Anthony Turner, and Greg Half, who are obviously well known in that area.
Very much, yeah.
They've assisted him with that. And it's huge, and he's been working on it for years. So I feel like I just wanted to push that out there because I think it's, I think it's great.
That's super. And those guys are good characters to have along with you for research.
Definitely, paper. They're great
operators.
Yeah.
I think that's brilliant. There's a few pieces to that. Like it's funny with like you mentioned about Ben Bergeron and. I think that's where there is there's a natural crossover between lots of different sports. And someone in your situation, you'd be an ideal generalist because you've chosen that path. I think there's some people that choose, okay, I'm going to stick with the same sport. I'm just a lunatic for this sport. And I think that's a valid and obviously a noble direction to go in. I like both mine and your directions of like complete lunacy and lots of different ways of going about to get to this point. I think the checkered kind of path has been, I think there's a lot of different breadcrumbs that we can pick stuff out of. Like I'm sure there's experiences, all of those different experiences. There's probably a small book in each of them at some stage, you know, and it's just a case of getting back into them. But what's the kind of next step for yourself, Claire? I'm gonna leave you after this, but what are you hoping to dig into? Are you gonna get back into fashion?
It's actually a few. I think my whole career has never been like originally when I started. I was like, I want to work for GB rowing, and then I was like, okay, maybe GB cycling or swimming, like those three things. I was very into like physiological based sports where I could see the impact I was having, like team sport. I kind of think in my head I'm like, yeah, okay, I want to increase their performance, but a lot of it is the injury management, and you can't really see the impact on performance easy, if that makes sense. Like, so I was never really interested in team sport, but you know, my career's taken me all over the place in places I never thought I would go. And I love that. And I think that has changed the way that I view what I want to do as well. So I'm very open to where I want to go. And I've got a few ideas. Like I've come into this position to see if I want to be an academic, like to see if I want to do more research, and I do. And then contemplating a PhD. And that's linked to the speed stuff I'm doing with Jonas right now. I'm going to speak to a few people in the next few weeks about what I could do there. So that's one thing. But then I also really just, I'd like to be like an S&C manager and potentially performance director. That is something that's always like interested me. So I'm open, and I feel like whatever happens, like I always believe like put what you need in place to make you, you know, to suit you to those positions. So what I'm doing now is aligning me to go either way, so that I do have options and I'm not like pigeonholed, basically.
No, that's super. That's excellent. I've had a great time talking
me
to you,
too.
Claire. Appreciate you taking the time. And hope you have a lovely day. Actually, before that, we'd go. So where can people catch you? People can catch you on Instagram and things like that. But like these, where can we go for it?
Yeah. So I always need to remind myself.
Just like I did.
Yeah.
I was like, no, come back.
My Instagram is Claire_Tracy_coach. It used to be fitness, and I I changed it to coach, but I don't know which one I prefer. And I probably am most active on there. I do have my Facebook page, which is Claire Tracy Fitness, but that kind of just is the stuff that shares through Instagram and Twitter. I don't post as much on there either, but it's CITracy86 if they want to connect on there.
Super. Excellent. Well, I think there could be a few people around to you with the amount of experience you have and the
quality of work. I like talking to people, so
yeah, I think it's great, and I hope people can connect with you. It'll be great. I've learned an awful lot today, so I appreciate you taking the time, Claire.
And thank you for having me.
No worries, and have a lovely day.
Okay, folks, so you've just been listening to episode number 65 of the Performance Path Podcast with Claire Tracy. First of all, guys, I want to say a massive thank you to Claire for joining me today. It was a really good chat. Second of all, folks, we do have some interesting and exciting news coming up on the podcast over the next couple of weeks. I'm going to leave you in a little bit of suspense for the moment, and you'll be able to see what's happening on the socials very, very soon. But thanks again for all of your support, folks. If you want to check out any of the previous podcasts, you can check us out on our home base of Podbean or any of the other spots you get your podcasts. And hope you guys have a great day. I'll chat to you soon.